now fully operational, according to officials there. The airport was without power for most of Friday, causing cancellations and chaos. CBS's Lee Kinnery is at Heathrow.
Europe's busiest tarmacs are back in business.
Flames are getting higher.
After the spectacular fire at an electrical substation nearby Thursday night caused a power cut to Heathrow Airport and over 16,000 homes in the area. The transport hub shut down for over 16 hours. The ripple effect immediate and global.
President Trump continues to attack a federal judge. CBS's Nicole Skenga is traveling with the president in New Jersey.
Presiding over the landmark case, federal judge James Boasberg. In court yesterday, the federal judge rebuked the administration for ignoring his order to turn the planes around 1 week ago, mid-flight, until he could review their cases. And accused Deputy Assistant Attorney General Drew Ensign of using disrespectful language and missing deadlines.
The administration says it will revoke the temporary status of 532,000 Cubans, Haitians, Nicaraguans, and Venezuelans. Details from CBS News immigration reporter Camilo Montoya Galvez.
This is a program that was set up by President Biden to reduce illegal immigration at the U.S.-Mexico border by offering would-be migrants a legal way to enter the U.S. so they wouldn't have to use a smuggler and cross into the country illegally. More than 500,000 people came under that process, and now the Department of Homeland Security is warning them that if they do not voluntarily leave the country, self-deport, they will face immediate arrest and deportation by ICE.
The migrants could be deported in about a month. The administration continues to deny a report that Elon Musk was going to get a classified Pentagon briefing on how the U.S. would react to an attack from China. CBS's Charlie Dangita says it's a they said.
Whether or not he was originally supposed to sit in on those classified briefings and then they either modified it or changed the game after that story broke, they won't say.
He sold millions of grills and won the World Heavyweight Boxing Championship twice. George Foreman has died at 76. CBS's Wendy Gillette reports.
George Foreman launched his heavyweight boxing career and life in the limelight as an Olympian, winning gold in Mexico City in 1968. The native Texan then continued building his legacy, winning fight after fight and making history with his knockout victory over Joe Frazier in 1973.
Foreman's family said he died surrounded by loved ones. They didn't give a cause of death. This is CBS News.
If you're 55 and up, T-Mobile has plans built just for you. Get the savings you want on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/choice55 and start saving today.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Or racial group in the U.S. The murder rate for Native American women and girls is up to 10 times higher than the national average, according to the U.S. Department of Justice, yet they account for less than 1% of the population. Desiree Todi with the Center Against Sexual and Domestic Abuse is a member of the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa in Wisconsin.
There's jurisdictional issues that come into play as to how things are investigated, how things are tried, and there's always racism. There's less attention paid to the individuals that some of these things happen to.
The Wisconsin Department of Justice created a task force to combat violence against Native women across the state after legislation that would have addressed these issues failed to pass. Poor tracking and data collection are just some of the many issues that contribute to the epidemic amongst Indigenous women. During a multi-state march last month, Todi read a list of names of Indigenous people from Minnesota who had died from domestic violence. No such list currently exists for Wisconsin, and Todi says she's working on changing that.
I have three daughters that I want them to grow up as strong Native women, and I want them to grow up safely as strong Native women. I mean, this is their futures on the line. This is their ability to walk down a street safely.
Research shows Indigenous women also face significant barriers when seeking help after experiencing domestic violence. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Your more news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Brandon Bormans. A nice start to the weekend. A bit of a different finish, though. Mostly sunny today with highs in the mid-30s. For tonight, increasing clouds, lows in the upper 20s. Becoming breezy on Sunday with rain developing, possibly mixed with some snow in the morning. High temperatures in the upper 40s. Right now, it's 28 degrees.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we've got Angela Lang from Block here as our co-host for the day. Also, Representative Darren B. Madison, and This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation, 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Albaugh, along with our outstanding producer and engineer, Mr. Aaron Zommers, on the board.
Thanks for tuning in for this week's Best of the Todd Albaugh Show. We're going to take a listen to the first hour of Thursday. We start off with Dan Schaefer, founder of the Recombobulation Area and Civic Media's political editor, talking about the state Supreme Court candidate debate that happened on Wednesday night. Enjoy.
Going to hit 70 degrees in much of Wisconsin by tomorrow, and then 30 by Sunday. Yes, that's that time of year in the state of Wisconsin. Glad to have you along. Big show today. It's an all-Dan day here on the Todd Albaugh Show. Zommers, I'm very excited about this. Are you?
Well, yes, of course. We've got a lot of great Dans.
We have all kinds of great Dans at 12:30. We're going to have, I'm very excited about this, Dan Jacobs is going to be here via StreamYard. He is a great Milwaukee chef, of course, and he is going to be here talking about their the great event called the 6th Annual Din Some, Give Some charitable event sponsored by Open Table in Milwaukee.
Which is, in case you're wondering, not run just by Dan Jacobs, but also Dan Van Wright. So two Dans there.
Yeah, two
for
Dan.
One Dan.
But one Dan's going to join us from that event. But yes, you're right. A total of two Dans with that event. And of course, Dan Jacobs involved with Top Shelf as well. So looking forward to talking about that. I love cooking, of course. But right now, honored by yet another Dan, make it three Dans we're talking about today. The one, the only. He's our favorite Dan, the political editor of Civic Media and also the founder of the Recombobulation Area, the one, the only, Mr. Dan Schaefer, live and in person. How are you doing, Dan?
Live and in person from the studios here in the world headquarters in Madison, joining the Alba Show. Thanks for having me, Todd. Always a treat to join you.
Well, I love having you here because it's just fun doing it in person. And we had a chance to hang out last night. We were part of the Up North News event on the election coming up on April 1st for the Supreme Court justice race.
And is that when that's happening? April 1st? As if we haven't talked about it enough.
No joking. But it was really, I thought, a great evening. And I hope that the listeners tuned in last night on Civic Media. We appreciate our owner and CEO, Sage Weil, for carrying that. And for Pat Kreitlow and all the people in Up North News Radio for putting it together. It was just, I found it very educational for me. We talked about education. We talked about the economy. We talked about reproductive rights and then the election at large. And then we had a watch party for the actual Supreme Court race. It was quite an evening.
It was. And, you know, I love coming to Madison for these types of events because no place in the world does civic engagement like Madison, Wisconsin. It's like, what is it? Like a 90% turnout for election, something like that. Yeah. And, you know, so many people showed up to this event. It was really a great one and got to, you know, interact with the crowd a little bit as I started my panel asking people if they were registered, if they'd been voting. A lot of people are ready to vote, ready to get out there for this one.
And I guess I take it a little bit for granted I grew up an hour from here in Richland Center. And so we've come into Madison fairly frequently, but now having lived here the better part of 20, 25 plus years, when there are events like this, I guess I just take for granted people are going to show up. But I mean, I don't want to overstate it. There were at least 100, 150 somewhere in there.
Easily.
That showed up in person right across the street at the Overture Center. And I just found it interesting you saying, you know, this is not necessarily the norm in other places around Wisconsin.
Right. Or anywhere in the world. Like Madison, no place in really in the country votes and gets out and gets after it quite like Madison does.
And it was super cool because there were a couple of young people, I would say, in high school that showed up last night as well. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really cool that their parents brought them. And they weren't just sitting there on their phones. They were engaged and listening the entire time.
Yeah. People, you know, I think there was some sort of connection with like a Voters of Tomorrow type of group and all of that. And, you know, the youth vote in this election is going to be important because it's you know, it's not a presidential race, but turnout is such a factor. You know, we're only going to get what, like half to two thirds of a turnout of what a presidential year is. And that's really going to matter if young people show up to the polls, too.
Yeah, we could talk a little bit more about that as the half hour goes on here. But let's get to the second part of the evening. And that was the actual debate between Judge Susan Crawford and Judge Brad Schimel, both running for Supreme Court on the April 1st ballot. When you and I were standing there for most of it, watching it together with this group at the Overture Center that came for the Up North News event, I was struck by a couple of things. I said this to you after the debate. Of all the debates I've seen, and I'm a pretty tough critic because I've prepared candidates from congressional races on down for a number of years. But I thought last night's debate, from a moderator standpoint, they kept it in control, but they kept it moving. And quite frankly, from both candidates giving real answers, I thought it was one of the better debates I've seen at any level for quite some time.
Yeah, I thought it was really well run. It was substantive. They touched on a lot of different issues. It didn't get bogged down in some sort of like personal jabs really between the candidates or anything like that. I would recommend that people take the time to sit down and watch that one if you still have questions about this debate. I also think Judge Susan Crawford, I thought she did a terrific job. And yeah, I think, too. I thought she was really in command throughout the debate and was kind of put Schimel on the defense. But I think there were some points where he was really reeling to try to scramble and there were some points that he just outright dodged the questions. There were some points where he seemed to be kind of backpedaling on a certain number of questions as well. But I thought, with Crawford, like, she's the candidate who's not as well known right in this race. Schimel has been the attorney general. Mm-hmm. This is now the third time that he is running for a statewide race. Wisconsin voters know him more than Crawford. And we saw that in the Marquette polling last week when it was, somewhere around 40% of people don't have an opinion on Schimel. And it was something like 60-65% on Crawford. And so for the people who are getting to know Susan Crawford, as we get to crunch time here in this race, I think this is a really great window for people to understand the type of candidate that she is, the background that she has and the type of approach she could bring to the bench on the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
Yeah, I mean, I went into this concerned for her only from the standpoint for the things you said, that Schimel's been a statewide candidate, a statewide office holder. He's gone through this before, and it can be very intimidating for anyone who hasn't gone through that stuff before. And we haven't, I know you've seen her, you've been everywhere as reporting this for Civic Media and for the Recombobulation area. You've seen her in person. I am not, mm-hmm. Not in person, but you have. But my point is, I haven't seen her in a long form setting like that.
Yeah, we've had her on the airwaves on a number of different shows across the Civic Media Network over the past few months. And, there's also been some kind of like live and in-person events that she's been speaking at. And I think she's starting to hit the groove with mm-hmm. her campaign right now. And I was at an event last week in Milwaukee at the Rotary Club of Milwaukee that put on in partnership with the Milwaukee Press Club. And, that was an interview that I thought she did really well in. It was also Matt Smith who moderated last night's debate on WISN 12. Emily Fannin from CBS 58 was there. So it was like real questions from real journalists. I also saw her at an event with Derek Mosley at Marquette University Law School. And I thought that one at the Rotary Club that she had last week, things seemed to really start to click into place for her. She was in command of the room. She was answering the questions well. And I think that was the version of Susan Crawford who showed up for that debate last night. Very well prepared.
Yeah.
There were points where Schimel didn't quite have an answer for things. And Crawford was just right there with something ready to say, something prepared. So she seemed 1,000 times more prepared for that debate than Schimel did.
No, I totally agree. And I put it in more crass terms. I think, it was last week. I said, I thought part of the reason that a judge and now Justice Protasiewicz won her race is because in that debate, I thought she came across as the alpha candidate, that she was in control, that she knew what she wanted. She wasn't afraid of it. And I would say the same thing last night in the debate last night. I thought Crawford came across as the alpha candidate who knew what she who she was, what she believed, wasn't going to back down, and was well prepared. I'm not trying to say that Schimmel had a disastrous debate. But to your point, there were a couple of things. It was softballs, like, you know, what's the former Supreme Court justice in Wisconsin would you most emulate? And he couldn't name anybody.
Yeah, and it just seemed so, it was bizarre that those questions came right at the very end of the debate. And it's just like, yeah, we'll throw a couple, like, you know, fun questions or softball questions. And the fact that he was, like, flummoxed by those, it just didn't, you know, didn't reflect well on him.
No, and the other question I thought that Crawford really knocked it out of the park was, name a case where your ruling from the bench upset some of your supporters. Crawford picked the case where after Walker got defeated, Governor Walker, by Tony Evers, the Republican legislature passed a bunch of stuff to clip the power, essentially, of the governor. That came to Crawford's bench or her court, and she ruled basically mostly in favor of Republicans because she said, I might not have agreed with it, but it was constitutional. And Schimmel could not name one case in which that happened for him.
Yeah. And there was also the question that, like, just it seemed like an obvious question that was going to be asked in this type of debate on the case involving the 2020 election and the Trump campaign's challenge to essentially overturn the election results in Wisconsin. And, you know, there it seemed really obvious that that would be a question. It's been one of the single most consequential cases that the Wisconsin Supreme Court has ruled on in recent memory. And it had a case where, you know, one of the three conservative justices or four at the time, you know, sided with the liberal wing of the court. And Wisconsin's Supreme Court was the closest state court in the country to siding with the Trump campaign in its ridiculous 2020 election challenges. And Schimmel just seemed completely caught off guard by this question. Yeah. And, like, if you're doing a short list of questions that you're going to get in this in this debate, that would be on it. But he just did not seem prepared for that at all. And Crawford seemed more than prepared. Yeah.
I thought the only gaffe, and it's a small one, but I watch for these things, was when the moderators asked Judge Crawford about a case that involved one of these former sex offenders. And she gave them a perceived light sentence of 4 years. And the moderator said, do you regret that? And immediately she said, no, I don't. And then she went on to say, because I followed the law. You and I both know that's going to get clipped out as a TV ad and it's going to be taken out of context.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, and that's the thing. It's like these, you know, having debates about the ads, it's just such a frustrating dynamic because everything is being, you know, because of the record spending in this race, like so much of the communication that people are seeing, like to the extent to which, you know, people are tuning in for this debate, there's probably far more people who are going to be seeing the ads for this as opposed to the debate. So, like, that is a factor to consider as well. But at the same time, I think there's a number of things from that debate that Schimmel said that the Crawford campaign is going to be able to clip for ads as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like I said, that was the only note I had for her for the entire debate. It was fairly minor. I thought that if I was on a scorecard, which I didn't really do, I've done in the past, but if I was going to do a scorecard, I would say that Crawford was far and away the winner.
I think the camp, you know, I've checked in with a couple sources. I think the campaign is really happy with how the debate went last night.
And as Jay Matinier said earlier, the far right's only criticism of Judge Crawford was that she didn't smile enough. So if that's the only criticism, you know, she must have done pretty well. What did Dan Schaefer and I talk about after a couple of beverages last night? Why might the Democrats be in trouble? We'll give you the actual sober details after this on the Todd Hallball Show on the Civic Media Ready Network.
Up next, the rest of Todd's conversation with Dan Schaefer. Stick around.
A new choice. Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. 540 WAUK.
No more mold. No more damage. No more slipping and hurting. Make your ordinary bathroom extraordinary for only $99 per month. New shower, new door, new tub, new wall, new anti-slip technology. BCI Bath and Shower is made in America for the highest quality. First 50 callers save $1,500 on a never-clear glass treated door. BCI Bath and Shower. Interest-free financing options. 800-329-4115. 800-329-4115. 800-329-4115.
At Civic Media, we encourage active political engagement and remind listeners to think critically about political advertisements you may hear during this critical election year. Our stations are licensed by the FCC and are required to accept all ads for federal candidates. We also air state and local candidates as well as paid ads from issue and PAC groups. Truth is rarely as simple as any political ad may claim. So again, we urge you to think critically critically about what you hear in the spirit of promoting authentic and respectful civic dialogue.
A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
There is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man.
Milwaukee's best.
It's a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity.
Hey man, what about Milwaukee, man?
It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition.
I think God would want us to go to Milwaukee.
And it lies between the pit of a man's fears and the summit of his knowledge.
What do you think about Milwaukee?
This is the dimension of imagination. You are now entering the recombobulation area.
And let me tell you, when you're in the recombobulation area, it's even better when the founder of the recombobulation area is sitting next to you. Welcome back to the show. It's 21 past the hour of 12 noon on Thursday, March 13th. Zomer's on the board dialing up the only introduction. Well, the introduction that could only be followed by the one, the only Dan Schaefer, founder of the recombobulation area, and our political editor here at Civic Media.
It's such a joy to hear that. Whenever Zomers plays that when I'm on here on the Alba show, it's such a joy. It's so fun to hear that. It's incredibly goofy, but exactly the type of comedy I enjoy.
It's the ethos of the recombobulation area. That's unique, right. Well thought out, and based in Milwaukee, but applicable statewide.
Absolutely. We have a very discombobulating politics here in the state of Wisconsin. We all need a place to recombobulate.
Absolutely. Speaking of discombobulating, money, and I know we talk about this across the network in a lot of different shows, but I don't think a lot of people enjoyed the Citizens United case from years ago in the U.S. Supreme Court, which said, hey, money is speech and you can't limit free speech. And so pretty much now there are no limits on campaigns, just to cut right to the bone. Yeah. And we're seeing this now, Dan Schaefer, in Wisconsin once again. Yes, a lot of money being spent on both sides, but no one individual more so than Elon Musk.
Yeah, and that really came into play in a big way in the debate last night. You know, I think there was a lot of people wondering if this election is going to be a referendum on Elon Musk and on what he is doing in the Trump administration with Doge, which all of the other craziness that he is bringing to Washington, D.C. But, and this was something we talked about in our panel discussion as well, you know, talking about the economy, talking about the fact that Tesla is bringing a case that could make its way to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And I'm going to read a quote from a friend of the show, friend of the network, Joe Zepecki, who characterized this very well.
He was on last night.
He was ready to go. He came in ready to fire. So he said there, you know, I'm going to read his quote, and you can check this out, this video out that we just published at the recombobulation area as well. So he says, there are rules and laws of political gravity. The extraordinary opportunity that we have in Wisconsin in just 2.5 weeks is to be the first voters anywhere in the United States to send a message that is stop. That's enough. This is not what people voted for. Mm-hmm. And I think hearing that comment from Zepecki and then hearing, hearing Susan Crawford talk about Elon Schimmel in this race,
the light
I think
of the
it
night.
Is really driving. That got the biggest reaction in the watch party that we're at in Madison. That's for sure. That really seems to be emerging as the dominant theme in this election, because, of course, that, you know, like there was a ton of spending in the 2023 race with Janet Protasiewicz. There's been a ton of spending in this race, but there hasn't been that spending from somebody who is like right next to the seat of power and changing things. And so if Elon thinks that he can buy, you know, a state Supreme Court in Wisconsin, what's to stop him from getting involved and throwing his money around in every race at every level across the country?
Yeah.
And I think this is such an opportunity for voters in Wisconsin to be, like Zepecki said, to be the people who were the first line of people to stand up and say, stop doing what you're doing.
I couldn't agree more with what Zepecki said. I couldn't agree more with what you said, Dan Schaefer. The only concerning part for me as a pessimistic former political operative is I think that only works if the Democratic base is ginned up and ready to go, because saying this is going to be a referendum on Trump and Elon, I say be careful what you wish for because you might get it, because there's a lot of the Trump MAGA base in Wisconsin that is still, because the effects haven't hit them yet.
Sure.
And they actually like what's going on. They mm-hmm. like all the cuts at the federal level because it hasn't affected them. Perhaps other folks who have a broader view of this, to your Zepecki's point, to say this is not who we should be. Those folks have to be ready to go and vote. And one of the most underreported things, and here's what you and I were talking about over a couple of glasses of beverages, which are not coffee, which we have now, is that Marquette Law School poll came out last week. I thought one of the most underreported points in that, well, you tell folks what we talked about.
Yeah, so one of the things, you know, and I have written breakdowns at the Recombobulation Area about the Marquette University Law School poll. And one of the things that really stood out to me from that poll was the favorability rating of the Democratic Party. Now, you know, not of individual Democrats like Tony Evers or a Tammy Baldwin or whoever it might be, but of people's views of the Democratic Party at large. And that was the opinion, you know, polling for that was really low. I think it was like 30 some percent favorable to 60 some percent unfavorable across the board. And then with independents, I think it was something close to like 15 to 20%
yeah.
favorable of the Democratic Party. Like the party has some real, real deep challenges. And I think even people who are, you know, vote Democratic have a lot of frustration with what the Democratic Party is doing. So if you look at kind of the favorability ratings in that poll, you know, Trump was pretty close to 50-50, maybe a couple points underwater. Elon was somewhere more like 10 to 15 points underwater. The Democrats were somewhere like 20 to 30 points underwater. So it was like Trump's not that popular. Elon's not popular at all. But the Democratic Party had even worse favorability ratings than either of them.
And you talked to a lot of people, Dan Schaefer, and some of your reporting. I know you found out that Republicans are ready to go. MAGA is ready to go. And they are doing doors in places you might not think.
Yeah, I think that was part of their strategy last fall in the election to not, you know, to compete in places like Milwaukee and Madison and Dane County and places that, yeah, they know they're going to lose overall and not probably win a majority of votes. But if they can cut into those margins a little bit, and, you know, we've heard stories of, you know, some of these Elon canvassers coming into some very blue districts, very blue neighborhoods in Madison and Milwaukee, trying to cut into those margins. And, you know, there are persuadable voters if you get out there and talk to people. So, you know, I think over the last couple of weeks, it's really seemed like the Crawford campaign has been revving things up, you know, getting Ben Wickler back into Wisconsin and back into the fold. And some of these efforts, you know, seems to be having an impact on that as well. But, you know, this is going to be a close, tight race. And there's going to be, you know, I would expect even though we're past the threshold of most expensive state court race in history, like there's no stopping Elon from dumping another $20 million into this over the next few weeks.
And that is discombobulating. But Dan Schaefer, always great to have you here for the Recombobulation Area. You make us feel better. You help us understand it. You can find all of his work at the Recombobulation Area and at Civic Media as well. Thanks, Dan. Have a great day.
You as well. Thanks.
All right. Stay tuned. Another great Dan next. Dan Jacobs talking about a great event in Milwaukee around food and a great cause. Stay with us right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Up next, we have Todd's conversation with Chef Dan Jacobs from Milwaukee.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Officials at London's Heathrow Airport say it's fully operational a day after it was forced to shut down. CBS's Lee Kinnear is there.
Europe's busiest tarmacs are back in business after the spectacular fire at an electrical substation nearby Thursday night caused a power cut to Heathrow Airport. The ripple effect immediate and global.
President Trump continues to attack a judge who's questioned his use of a centuries-old law to quickly remove migrants from the country. Here's CBS's Nicole Skenga.
In court yesterday, the federal judge rebuked the administration for ignoring his order to turn the planes around 1 week ago, mid-flight, until he could review their cases.
He sold millions of grills and thrilled millions of boxing fans. George Foreman has died. Here's CBS's Wendy Gillette.
His family announcing his death on social media with an emotional tribute, saying he lived his life marked by unwavering faith, humility, and purpose.
Foreman was 76. CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
The Badgers face BYU. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. March Madness, it's Wisconsin and Brigham Young University tonight in Denver. Badgers forward Nolan Winter. On what kind of team is BYU?
Yeah, I mean, a very tough team, well coached. Shoot the three at a very high level, so going to be a point emphasis for us to limit those. But no, they're really good in transition too, so it's going to be a good game for us and a good test for us for sure.
Game time, 6:25. It was one and done for Marquette, losing last night in the first round to New Mexico, led by head coach Richard Pitino, 75-66. Marquette Shaka Smart after the loss.
Yeah, congrats to New Mexico, Coach Pitino. I thought they won the battle of poise. They were the more poised team over the majority of the game.
Boys high school basketball in the state finals today at the Kohl Center in Madison. Tonight, Racine Park against Tulsa West in Division II, followed by Wisconsin Lutheran versus Marshfield in Division I. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Brandon Bormans. A nice start to the weekend. A bit of a different finish, though. Mostly sunny today with highs in the mid-30s. For tonight, increasing clouds, lows in the upper 20s. Becoming breezy on Sunday with rain developing, possibly mixed with some snow in the morning. High temperatures in the upper 40s. Right now, it's 28 degrees.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. A Washington state audit of rejected 2020 mail-in ballots offers insight on whose ballots are more likely to be rejected and recommends actions to reduce that number, over 37,000 in 2024. Primary reasons for rejection include ballots received or postmarked after Election Day, a missing signature on a ballot envelope, or the voter's signature couldn't be confirmed. Auditors found 2020 rates varied from a high of 1.5% in Franklin County to 0.02% in Columbia County, but they also found higher rejections of younger voters, 18 to 21, where 2.6% of ballots were rejected, and black voters at 2.5%. They also found that non-native English speakers were 47% more likely to have ballots rejected. Signature issues can often be cured, but many voters don't or can't correct it. The auditors recommended outreach programs on college campuses, sending letters and calling voters with curable signature issues, more training on signature verification, opening early voting centers 18 days before the election, an advisory committee for disabled voters, and ballot drop boxes for every 15,000 voters. In the 2024 general election, Washington's statewide rejection rate had dropped to 0.94%, but of those, over 24,000 were rejected for a mismatched signature. Find a link to the audit at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org.
Nothing you could say could tear me away from my dog. My dog is shallow, y'all. Hi, I'm Smokey Robinson. When you adopt a shelter pet, you not only bring joy and love into your home, you also give another animal the chance to experience that special bond. Join me in supporting American Humane Society and their incredible work to help our most vulnerable friends. Together, we can make a real difference. Donate today at AmericanHumane.org.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome the director of a new documentary called A Road at Night, John Roach. And then actor Ezekiel Drews joins the show to talk about a fun new musical. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Thanks for sticking with us on the Best of the Todd Allball Show. Here we have our second and third Dan from Milwaukee, a pair of chefs that you might know.
Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. 34 now past the hour of 12 noon on this Thursday, March 13th, 2025. Zommers on the board. Dialing up by request off the Spotify list of our next guest. You know him, you love him, especially if you're a foodie person in Wisconsin. He is a renowned restaurateur in the Milwaukee area and has been on national shows like Top Chef and Beat Bobby Flay. But he is also here as a part of Main Street Alliance and talking about a charitable organization that he and others are a part of. We welcome Chef Dan Jacobs via StreamYard from Milwaukee. Chef Jacobs, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys? This is great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, we are very excited. I know I'm very excited. I'm a foodie kind of guy. I have the Food Network on. I have the Cooking Channel on a lot. I wish I were a better cook, a better chef, but I enjoy doing it. But I enjoy others who are like yourself. But, you know, we're all across the state of Wisconsin here on 11 different stations. For those people maybe that aren't in Southeast Wisconsin or who are not foodies, tell us just a little bit about yourself, where you grew up, and how you got into cooking.
Sure. You know, I grew up in the Chicagoland area, grew up in the city. Me and my wife moved to Milwaukee in 2011. So we've been here about 14 years. It'll be 14 years next month. Worked around, you know, in a lot of restaurants in Chicago growing up, and then about four or five restaurants here in Milwaukee. And me and my partner, Dan Van Wright, opened up Dan Van and Estrev 9 years ago, which is crazy to say out loud. it just seems like time has flown. But, you know, we have Dan Dan, Chinese American restaurant, kind of a love letter to my childhood growing up. Like all major life events were at Chinese restaurants, it seemed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think my happy place is, you know, Chinese American food. It's just something that comforts me and makes me happy. And my thought is that if it makes me happy, it's going to make other people happy. So that's how kind of Dan Dan got its start. And then Esther Ev, our other restaurant, is named after my great-grandmother Esther and Dan's grandmother Evelyn. These are the women that cook for our family, so we honor them by naming that restaurant after them. That restaurant kind of goes with a lot of, you know, it kind of just goes in different directions. Like it allows, you know, complete creativity. We can kind of put anything on the menu we want, which is really just kind of fun. And it's a tasting menu, and it really showcases, I think, showcases our creativity to the public. It's just, it's a fun restaurant. Mm-hmm. We also don't really take ourselves too seriously. Like, although the food may be serious, one bathroom at Estrev is inspired by The Simpsons and Grateful Dead, and the other bathroom is inspired by Star Wars and comic books. So
I love it. I absolutely love it. Something you said a couple sentences back, that has come to soulful cooking and from your grandmother. I know that both of my grandmothers were great cooks. They made food that made me feel better. It was just part of our family. And one of the most obscure cooking shows I ever saw, but one of the coolest and something I'll never forget, William Shatner had a short-lived, I'm not sure if it was streaming or if it was on some channel, where it was a brown bag something. He would bring a brown bag of a drink, alcohol, and then have a chef cook with him. And he did this with Alton Brown one time. And Alton Brown made him like this gravy and biscuits, and they were just talking. And Alton Brown said, you know, I don't like to be called a chef. I'm a cook. I cook because I cook for people. That, in the essence, is what it's about, cooking for the people that you love and making them happy. And I just, when you said that, that really struck a nerve.
I mean, food is one of those things that that has the ability to kind of, you know, cross all cultures, cross all, you know, political divides. It's just it's the table is a way to bring people together. And I think it's one of the most beautiful things that we do. Food has the ability to change people's, you know, view on the day. They can come in a bad attitude or a bad mood. And I think the greatest thing we could do is turn that bad mood around into a good mood. It's one of, I think it's one of the coolest things you can do with food.
Yeah.
Food is the gateway to so many different cultures. It's how we learn about a culture is through food. So I think food is just one of those, you know, things that's, and it's also, it's great because you never stop learning.
Yeah.
You know, as a chef or a person just to have a career where I'm going to perpetually learn is great. Like right now, we have my friend Rasika in town, who I was on Top Chef with, and her food is Tamal, Southern Indian, and it's very out of our comfort zone here. Mm-hmm. And it's great because our team here at Dan Dan is going to learn so much this weekend about a cuisine that we don't know anything about. And that's great. That's what food's all about.
I couldn't agree more. I you know, as a kid growing up in a 98% white town in Southwest Wisconsin, and taking you know, lots of trips to El Salvador over the years, and the beauty and the simplicity of Salvadoran food and learning about that culture through food is one of the things that makes me the happiest to this very day. You can't beat a chicharron pupusa, but that's another bottle of wine or drink.
One of my favorite things ever are pupusas. Like I literally lived off of them for a little while. It's just the best. And like, talk about an inexpensive way to keep yourself alive.
Yeah.
Pupusas.
If you don't, if you're not familiar, it's a basically, and I'll put it in Todd terms, it's like a stuffed tortilla, and then they grill it on a flat top, and then you serve it with cortado, and which is kind of a cabbage, and then some mild red sauce, and it's you eat it with your real Salvadorans eat it with their hands. Also, you don't use a fork and knife, so it's beautiful.
It's great, and it's a, like all those kids who love their fermented stuff. That fermented cabbage salad that goes on top of it is the best.
I could eat a jar of it.
That's key.
All right, let's talk a little bit about this event coming up here. The 6th annual Dim Sum, Give Sum charitable event sponsored by Open Table. This is something that's very personal to you. And tell us, Chef Dan Jacobs, what this is all about.
So, yeah, during our like the run up to opening of Dandan in 2016, I was diagnosed with a rare neuromuscular disease called Kennedy's disease. Kennedy's disease is very similar to ALS. It's a degenerative disease where I am slowly, you know, losing abilities that I think, you know, I just up until this started, I holding on to things. Like these are things that have become progressively more difficult. You can hear it in my voice too. It's like you hear it in the, like it's almost like a graveliness in my voice, and that's directly related to the muscles in my vocal cords and how they're deteriorating. It's tough. And then being a chef is like, you know, this is a physical job. And so, you know, it's really kind of changed a lot of how I work. But I think it was like the second time I went back for a checkup. And when I realized that nothing, like, I was like, okay, cool. We're going to go back to this checkup. They're going to give me a pill. There's going to be a treatment. We'll start working on something. Well, there is nothing. Having a rare disease is one of those super great things where there is no real treatment sometimes for these things. And I remember I was very angry for an evening. You know, I kind of cursed the world. And then the next day, me and my wife, Kate, kind of really, you know, we kind of brainstormed things that we could do. And became Dim Sum, Give Sum, became like this annual event. I think we've raised, you know, in the neighborhood of $110,000 or $120,000. This year is going to be our biggest event ever. You know, we have over 30 chefs from all over the country. We're returning almost all, but I believe three of the Top Chef contestants from the season I was on season 21. We have chefs from Chicago, chefs from Madison, from Milwaukee, from Minneapolis. Like it's just kind of, it's become this really big event. So, you know, we're trying to raise, you know, through thankfully to our partners with Open Table, we're going to hopefully raise upwards of, you know, $40,000 to $45,000 this year. Wow. Which will be our biggest amount we've ever raised in a 1 year. I also, side note, there's this woman in Texas who outraises me for the KDA. That's where all the funds go. It's the Kennedy's Disease Association. I am not a competitive person until competition starts. And then all of a sudden I'm like, I need to outraise this woman. Like, I was like, I can't believe this woman beats me every year. So like, this is my attempt to beat her.
I think that's fantastic. You again, yeah. My paternal grandmother had something called scleroderma, which is a rare neuromuscular disease. And she kind of had the same, she for a while was angry. And then she said, you know, why not me? And she became an advocate. And I think that, you know, I hear that your passion, your voice, and I think this is just remarkable. And obviously, very sorry this has happened to you, but what you're doing to bring awareness and even better to raise these monies to help find a cure and to treat this is remarkable. Tell folks how they can get involved and be a part of this, Dan.
So, I mean, you can head over to Dan Dan's Open Table website if you want to book a ticket. It is going to be Sunday, April 13th from noon to 3. It's going to be a walk around event. So you can really just walk around and sample, you know, 30 different chefs' foods, stuff that you would never, you know, people that you might never have been to their restaurants before. I mean, it's going to be a really, really fun event. A lot of music, a lot of good times. We'll do some raffles. We'll, you know, it's just always kind of a real nice party atmosphere. And then I attempt to make you all cry by the end of it with some sort of speech.
I'm sure that'll happen as well. Absolutely. And this is, and not, you know, we love our Wisconsin chefs, our Wisconsin restaurants, but you're bringing in folks from all around the country, New York, Durham, North Carolina, Chicago, Houston, and the list goes on and on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just really cool. I mean, that's one of the things like chefs, and the, you know, we have this, we have this bond, and I think it's one of the coolest things. If somebody asks for help, everybody jumps in. Mm-hmm. And it's not just here. I mean, it's everywhere. Like, I think every chef has this thing in them where they just want to help other people. But I mean, I think it's part of what draws people like that to this industry. Like, it's definitely one of those things where I think we really enjoy helping our fellow chefs out. I mean, we love helping anybody out, but I think especially when it comes to our fellow chefs, we really jump in.
We're talking to Chef Dan Jacobs of Milwaukee, talking about his 6th annual event coming up, Dim Sum Give Sum charitable event sponsored by Open Table. We'll put all the details in our show notes. Will Mr. Zommer is our great producer, how you could get involved. We'll continue to remind people as that date approaches as well. Dan, tell us a little bit about your part of this group called Main Street Alliance. We've talked about it on this show before, but tell folks just briefly what this organization is. I know you have a day of action coming up on March 18th.
Yeah, on March 18th, we have this day of action coming up. So the Main Street Alliance is basically, they cultivate a network of entrepreneurs, connecting them with resources to build sustainable enterprises and uplift their communities. The Main Street Alliance membership drives state, federal policy making that gives a fair shot to small businesses and strengthens local economies nationwide. The MSA represents 30,000 small business owners nationally and 2,000 right here in the state of Wisconsin. Basically, we come together in Madison. We meet with our local representatives and we tell them, you know, stuff that I think truly matters to small businesses. Some of the things that, you know, I think are, you know, really needed at a state level: childcare investments. You know, our childcare system is in crisis, and this has been a longstanding problem. This isn't something that's, you know, just happening. The workforce, childcare workforce, is behind and fleeing for better paying jobs, honestly. Like, they're underpaid and they want to do something else. Facilities are being forced to close, which raises rates due to the economic pressures, which is, as a result, kids, parents, and our economy are all struggling. Small businesses are taking a particular hit. Half of all small business owners named childcare access and costs as one of our top issues. We see it right here at Dandan. You know, one of our executive sous chefs, he's got a daughter, his wife works, he works. And I think it's one of these things where he has to choose, or his wife has to choose, whether or not to work or to have childcare, because it's almost a push. And it's, you know, if we want to stimulate the economy and stimulate growth and stimulate sales tax, this is a great way to do it. You know, if you can support the childcare industry and create a system that's a little bit more cost effective, it creates and stimulates jobs, people spending money, making that sales tax. I think it's like almost a no-brainer. The other thing that I'm going to speak real quickly on is paid family and medical leave. You know, we have our general manager here at Dandan right now is on maternity leave. We gave her 4 weeks of paid maternity leave plus her 2 weeks of paid vacation that she's using up. So a total of 6 weeks. This is money that we are giving out of our pocket. We have no recourse on this money. It's not covered by anything. And, you know, this is a high level employee. And I think even from somebody who doesn't have children and, you know, I see this as such an important thing. Like, in early childhood development, you need that family unit together. And I think there's no way that we wouldn't do that. But the fact that, you know, we're alone, and, you know, our industry doesn't guarantee any sort of paid family leave. It would be great to be able to do that.
You can find more information at Main Street Alliance about their day of action on March 18th. And don't forget to check out Esther Ev and Dandan when you're in Milwaukee. Chef Dan Jacobs, thank you very much. We appreciate your time. Welcome back anytime.
Thank you so much.
Our pleasure. Dan Jacobs, everybody, stay tuned. Hour number two, including What's Worse, straight ahead on the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Your new choice. Real news. Great conversation. 540 WAUK.
Did you know there's a city in Wisconsin that goes all in on the idea of celebrating St. Patrick's Day for more than a week? Members of the Shamrock Club of New London, about an hour west of Green Bay, lead the festivities, which brings thousands of visitors to the area. But do you know what has officially kicked it all off for more than 40 years? Here's club member Ryan Lanning with the answer.
The Monday of our St. Patrick's Week is we always have Leprechaun Day, and the leprechauns are responsible for changing the population population science symbolically from New London to New Dublin, and then they visit various schools and nursing homes, and we bring smiles more than anything, and we like to enlighten our community. That's part of what we're about, and truthfully, I think everybody looks forward to seeing us, seeing the green suits and all the mischief and shenanigans that we like to pull. It's just a great time for everybody.
Even the city council votes to make New Dublin the official name for New London this time of year. That is one slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation, 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Pursuing truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Glad to have you along. It is 9 minutes before the hour of 1 o'clock. First of all, how about Dan Jacobs? Well, Dan Schaefer, too. It's a day of Dan's. But Dan Jacobs, here's a guy who is a we didn't have time to get into. He appeared to beat Bobby Flay and Top Chef. But he lived such a full life, we didn't even have time to get into that, because here is just a remarkable person who is a great award-winning chef. He had something unforeseen happen to him in this Kennedy's disease, and instead of just sitting around feeling sorry for himself, he says, no, I'm going to be a guy of action and a person of action, and now is raising, you know, over $100,000 to help defeat this thing. And he has a positive attitude, and he's just a remarkable person to talk to.
Yeah, that's the best way to respond to adversity is to shine a beacon on it, to ask for help, and to take action to help other people with the same problem.
Yeah. Chef Dan Jacobs, really, really appreciate. He's a busy guy and took time for us. Esther Ev and Dan are his two restaurants in Milwaukee. If you get down there, please check them out. They're absolutely fantastic.
There you go.
As it turns out. Number two, the block that he was just in, it ends at 10 till basically. I'm used to those interviews going to the top of the hour. And that's why I said hour two is straight ahead. And I partner walked out and went to the bathroom during that break. And I realized, well, wait, I got 10 more minutes to do before the top of the hour. it was this close to being the Aaron Zomer show.
Just for a few minutes.
Just for a few minutes. Some breaking news for you, courtesy of CBS News. And yes, I shouldn't say I guess. It's good news, but I just feel for all these federal employees and the ripple effect it will have on services and the ripple effect it will have on the economy. Now here, yet another turn, according to CBS News, just breaking, a federal judge in California has ordered six federal agencies to reinstate probationary employees who were fired last month, finding that their terminations by the Office of Personnel Management were unlawful. U.S. District Judge William Alsup in San Francisco handed down his order in a challenge brought by a group of unions against the Trump administration from the bench. He said that neither OPM nor its acting director, Charles Ezel, had the authority to direct the terminations across the agencies. The order extends relief to fired workers in the Department of Veterans Affairs, Agriculture, Defense, Energy, Interior, and Treasury. Also went on to say, quote, it's a sad, sad day when our government would fire some good employee and say it was based on performance when they know good and well that is a lie. Also said at the end of the hearing on the union's request for a preliminary injunction. The judge went on to say that, quote, that should not have been done in our country. It was a sham in order to avoid statutory requirements, unquote. The judge, who was appointed by former President Bill Clinton, noted that federal law allows for agencies to engage in a, quote, reduction in force, unquote, the government's name for mass layoffs, but doing so comes with several requirements. The judge said, quote, it can be done if it's in accordance with the law. This case is not about that. What this case is about is really an attempt to do a reduction in force, unquote, through OPM. He said that having OPM, the federal government's chief human resource agency, directed departments to fire probationary workers was, quote, an easy way to get a reduction in force underway and a gimmick, unquote. What's the, I think we played it before in the show, from Gypsy. You got to have a gimmick if you want to get ahead. The judge is calling this a gimmick, which is exactly what it is. We've talked about it on this program before. I know my colleagues have as well. It's all fair and good to have audits of government agencies to find out, hey, can something be done more efficient? Do we really need this many people here doing this job, or now with new technology, can it be done by fewer? Are there some agencies or divisions that have outlasted their usefulness? Those are all legitimate questions to be had. But instead of using a scalpel, and as the judge said, instead of going through the lawful review process of how you do that, you just take this mass action without regard. And here's the big mistake that Elon made in telling these people that they're being fired or their performance, when many of them either A, had in writing reviews of their performance, which said they were doing great, and or they had actually been promoted to new jobs because they were doing so well at their old job. They were promoted to new jobs, and that's why they were quote-unquote probationary employees, because they had been at their new job, which they got due to their great performance, for less than a year. And I think that's where Musk really messed up in say we're firing you basically for cause for poor performance. But when the judge is looking at this, he's saying, well, where's the poor performance?
Turns out if you just fire a bunch of people without actually looking at all at what they do or why they're there, it's just not going to turn out so good.
No. What you got yourself there is a gimmick, which is exactly what the judge said. You got to have a gimmick if you want to get ahead. Well, Elon tried his gimmick, didn't get him ahead, as it turned out.
That's all for this week's Best of the Todd Allbaugh Show. As always, if you want to hear the rest of the week's shows, you can go to civicmedia.us/shows or anywhere else you get your podcasts. And as Todd always says, whatever you believe in, whatever you're fighting for, do not give up. Keep banging your drum. We'll see you on Monday.
A new choice, Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation, 540 WAUK.
Todd Allbaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time as we will take a look at our NCAA basketball brackets after weekend number one. Also, the news of the weekend. Get you caught up. Join us.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Winter is out and winning is in. It's our break into spring statewide text to win contest on your local Civic Media radio station. Your daily shot at a Chula Vista getaway, Milwaukee Brewers club level tickets, or $100 cash. And every entry gets you closer to the grand prize, a brand new Verlo Queen mattress set complete with a mattress, sheets, protector, and pillows. Download the Civic Media app from the App Store or Google Play Store. Choose your station, then get set to win starting Monday, March 24th. It's time to break into spring with WAUK. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Christopher Cruz. One of the world's busiest airports is back in business. CBS's Haley Ott is at Heathrow in London.
Flights in and out of Heathrow are resuming after a fire at an energy substation nearby knocked out power in the area and forced Europe's largest airport to close, which caused travel chaos for hundreds of thousands of people. Ripple effects of the disruption will still be felt for days. UK officials have said no foul play is suspected in the fire, though the investigation is being led by counterterrorism police. Concerns have been raised over the fact that one fire was able to shut down Europe's largest airport. And officials here say they will look at the protection and resilience in place for critical infrastructure.
At a contentious court hearing in Washington, a federal judge wondered aloud if the Trump administration ignored his order to turn around planes that were carrying alleged gang members to a prison in Central America. CBS's Nicole Skenga has that.
Lawyers for some of those transferred to the high-security prison in El Salvador last weekend argued in court filings they weren't gang members at all, including the Venezuelan professional soccer goalie, Erce Reyes Barrios, who claims the U.S. government misinterpreted his soccer tattoo as a gang symbol, with no legal recourse before being transported to El Salvador.
The judge has also said he'll decide if a 1798 law can be used to justify those deportations. Olympic gold medalist, two-time heavyweight boxing champion, and master salesman George Foreman has died at the age of 76, a remembrance from CBS's Michelle Miller.
At the age of 45, Foreman reclaimed boxing's crown by knocking out Michael Moore.
Champion of the world!
At the same time, Foreman transformed his image from feared puncher to lovable pitchman, appearing in commercials.
Hi, I'm George Foreman, and this is my lean, mean, fat-reducing grilling machine.
Lending his name to an electric grill that became a fixture in tens of millions of American households.
The Trump administration has flown another group of migrants to the U.S. military base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, where they'll await deportation. CBS News immigration reporter Camilo Montoya Galvez has that.
Two U.S. officials tell us that there was one flight yesterday with 21 migrant detainees on board. We do not know their nationalities, but they will be held there until their home countries can accept their deportation. And we understand that more flights are supposed to happen in the next few days and in the coming weeks as well.
President Trump has rescinded the security clearances and access to classified information of former President Biden and members of his family. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need